We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We talk an awful lot here on Issues Etc. about women in the workplace, about the conflict between work and family that is unique to women because women are child bearers and, well, more naturally child rearers as well. The husband has his place, but there's an attachment between mother and child that cannot be substituted for by an attachment between father and child. It's simply different. So it is gratifying to see a recent column in the American Bar Association Journal on mothers in the workplace where they argue that, well, yes, there is a conflict there and there ought to be a priority there. What kind of reaction did that column get? Joining us to discuss this column in the American Bar Association Journal on mothers in the workplace, Joy Pohlman. She's managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of the book The Education Invasion and a recent column titled Yes, a Family Competes with Women's Careers, but Family Matters More. Joy, welcome back.
Hello, thank you.
What is wrong with the feminist motto, you can have it all?
It's lying to people. I think, behind that is what it really is implying to people is that there are not limits on your life. So in that way, it's kind of akin to the, you know, gender queer or the gender fluidity sort of ideology, and that it won't acknowledge any objective external reality. So the ones I talk about in the article related here, of course, are time and biology. You know, so time is limited. It's a fixed construct, and human bodies are limited. You know, despite all of the attempts to claim otherwise, only women can gestate babies in their wombs. So that has implications for the raising of children. Those are just hard physical realities that, you know, if you kick against the goads and the boundaries and the real structures of life, you will be forever banging your head against the wall and just, you know, creating more problems for yourself than if you acknowledge reality and seek to work in the most creative way within reality and in conformity with it.
You point out that women are often, because they face certain challenges in the workplace, they're often encouraged to be workaholics or addicted to their work. How does addiction to work cannibalize the family?
Well, and this is especially true for women because of our biological distinctness, but it's also true for men. The corporations abuse entire families, even when they treat men like interchangeable units. You know, I've seen big corporations pull men overseas, you know, for years, taking their wife and children away from family support. Repeat and constant moving through the corporate hierarchy can be damaging to a family in that way, too. So just treating your workers as if they are basically widgets on a factory line, as if they're robots, you know, push button, get output, rather than holistic human beings who have dignity and deserve things. And to be happy will not be happy without things like family, free time, the freedom to worship, and so forth. So this applies both to men and to women, but especially this dynamic oppresses women for things like, so for example, I just recently had an email discussion with working women about how they feel embarrassed to announce when they've had a baby because they know that means they're going to be taking maternity leave. And obviously men don't take maternity leave they don't take it as extensively as women do because, well, it is a huge physical job to pop a baby out of your body. And you know, that men don't do. So in this way, obviously, you know, of course, work ideally would sustain a family, would contribute to society through upholding families, making it possible. Obviously, kids need to eat. You know, they need shoes. They need good schools. They need homes. And a work can provide for all of those things. And that way, it's a blessing. But sometimes, you know, work can, especially work addictions, workaholism, taking work out of its proper place can compete with and undermine the family. And that's where it goes wrong.
Tell us about a recent article in the American Bar Association Journal and the reaction it received.
So So I was writing to respond or discuss this recent article by a woman who, you know, spent a number of decades as a lawyer, and now she is a law career counselor. So she gives people advice about how to have a better legal career. And so her most recent column basically just said what we have been talking about. It acknowledged the truth that if you are a female lawyer with a family, that family is going to be competing with your holistic dedication to a legal career in a way that it competes with and therefore can set you at a disadvantage to people who have, you know, no baseball games to go to after work, who don't have to take kids to doctor's appointments, so, you know, who don't have a husband who needs attention because he's a human being who loves his wife. All of those things, those are duties and responsibilities that are owed to the people you've committed to by creating a family, by marrying, by having children. And so people who don't have any obligations, who have no ties, who have no, you know, commitments to other people to love and, you know, give of themselves to other people in a family, those people obviously have more hours in their day and their week, just statistically speaking, that they can then put into work compared to people who aren't workaholics. But it's hard for women, especially women who've been trained to put their career first and to see the family as kind of an accessory or kind of a weekend thing. You know, women, it's really hard to, you know, to say, you know, I am at a competitive disadvantage because of my kids. For me as a working mom, that's not a problem because obviously my kids are more important. But, you know, that sort of tension is really sometimes hard for people to psychologically acknowledge. They want to be able to get to the top of the lawyer heap while also, you know, being a good mom to their kids. And the honest reality is that is almost always, it's very, very rare for that to be possible.
So what kind of reaction did this article generally receive? You have someone from the workplace talking with expertise on women in the workplace, basically saying what the feminist agenda refuses to say. What kind of reaction did it get?
Well, so I was sent that article by a lawyer, you know, so she is from the American Bar Association, and she was saying that, you know, in the lawyer groups that she's a part of, you know, there was a lot of outrage at this article acknowledging reality, at saying, you know, you have fewer hours to put into socializing, especially this article really focused on the career mentoring in the legal profession. She was saying, if you want to really get ahead, get to the top, you need to invest a lot of time in basically being a workplace mother or a workplace father, you know, in mentoring people and contributing to their career, helping them to learn more skills in your career. And that's one of the ways she said that you really can accelerate. But obviously that and mothers are so focused on, you know, getting their normal lawyer work done that extras like that are extremely difficult for them to put in. They're already exhausted. So the reaction that my lawyer acquaintance was conveying to me was a lot of women were just outraged to hear reality acknowledged in this article. And in fact, she said there were calls for the article to be, of course, you know, as there are everything nowadays, taken down, retracted, apologized for, and so forth.
Since we're on the subject of reality, you talk about fitting oneself for reality rather than buying into the culture's idea of what a woman's life ought to be in the workplace and home. What do you mean?
Well, you know, like I kind of mentioned earlier, you know, it is a reality that women are the sex that make the baby. I mean, obviously men and women make the baby together, but the women, you know, gestate the baby, grow the baby inside our bodies from conception. Then we nurse the babies after they're born. And it doesn't just end, you know, when the baby is separate technically from our bodies. Anyone who's had a little baby realizes, you know, the baby wants you for years and years. You know, just has this deep need for basically the mother. I mean, what happening with the little child, especially in the first 3 to 5 years of its life. So this isn't just get the baby out of your room and then you're back to reality. A lot of moms, including me, kind of had that feeling, but you don't realize once you brought that baby into the world, everything is different. You're in a new life. You can't go back, even if you can get, you know, your body detached. I jokingly can sometimes call my babies milk suckers, or sometimes, you know, when they're inside, they're the blood sucker. Anyway, but the point being, when, you know, the physical attachment is severed, you still have emotional and biological connections that are required for a healthy child development. So babies, you know, are they get their comfort from their mother. They get their sense of security and stability from their mother. And it's from the mother's presence, you know, teaches them that the world is a safe place, that they are competent, that they can go and explore. And really that emotional security with the mother provides the basis for all future happiness in life. So So that's just a reality. It's a biological social reality that you can't just change by just taking the baby away from the mom. The baby and the mom need each other. So it's obviously that is a huge demand. What I've just described is very difficult. It's hard. I mean, and I'm just going to, you know, as a mom, I don't always like it. I often don't like it. It is a huge amount of sacrifice that it requires to be a mother and attentive to your baby and really helping them grow. And it's hard. So, you know, rather than say, this is hard, I'm having a hard time with this, how can I do better? Our instinctive reaction, just as sinful human beings, is to do all kinds of defensive mechanisms. That's wrong. I don't believe it. I don't like it. I won't listen, so on and so forth. So, I mean, while those kind of defensive, rejective sort of responses are natural, and I have them all the time, I am happier and women and people are happier when instead of trying to run away from a hard truth, instead we try to embrace the hard truth and try to work ourselves into accepting it and responding to it. That just produces a better result for everybody. So, I mean, obviously people do that in different ways through, you know, through prayer, through listening to good counsel, to having help from a husband, from family, from a therapist. So, you know, we need all kinds of support ways to fit ourselves to reality. But again, you know, you always want to be pursuing conforming your mind and your actions to truth rather than, because the truth is hard, running away from it and hiding and pretending that it's not really the truth.
Joy Pullman is our guest. We're talking about a recent column in the American Bar Association Journal on mothers in the workplace. Why is the inevitable default of a mother trying to have it all outside childcare? Why is it not a solution? We'll answer that question next. From struggle to jubilation, the Psalms reveal the human experience. The Psalms also serve as a wonderful tool for devotion and reflection. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Engaging the Psalms, a Guide for Reflection and Prayer. Learn more about this new devotional resource at issuesetc.org or purchase Engaging the Psalms by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Engaging the Psalms, a Guide for Reflection and Prayer.
St. Paul Lutheran School of Hamel, Illinois is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're looking for a first and second grade teacher for the 2021-2022 school year. We pay 100% salary scale for the Southern Illinois District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Other benefits include full health care coverage, retirement and disability, and continuing education assistance. For more information, email jeff@issuesetc.org. Jeff@issuesetc.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
We are sustained by the water of life in baptism, the words of life in His Word, the bread of life in His Holy Supper. In the name of Jesus.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a recent column in the American Bar Association Journal on mothers and the workplace. Joy Pullman is our guest, managing editor of The Federalist. So, Joy, the inevitable default of a mother trying to have it all is outside childcare. Why is that not a solution?
Well, for all of the reasons that I've just mentioned, the biological need of a baby for his mother doesn't end with, you know, the baby exiting the birth canal. It extends, and it is intensive, especially in those first 3 to 5 years to life, but it goes on. You know, I had talked to one of my older mother mentors, I think it was honestly last summer, but she noted to me, she has adult children, you know, and grandchildren now. And she said to me, you know, the need for mothering never stops. I'm still mothering my adult children. And she said that in a positive way. She was gratified. It gave her a lot of meaning and happiness to see that, you know, the children weren't out of her lives, even though they were adults. They, you know, needed her, and she loved the grandchildren, and she, you know, could have, so on and so forth. So it can be a wonderful, great thing. But the point is, of all of that, is a paid person, even if they're really wonderful and nice, and, you know, and we have, you know, a wonderful babysitter that we love who comes regularly. She's like part of the family. But, you know, everyone knows that no matter how nice a nanny or babysitter or childcare worker is, they're not the mother. And the children need the bulk of their time to be with the mother and the father, of course, the father. And so that is just apparent if you look at the, you know, the physical design of mothers and children and child development literature. So, of course, that's hard to hear because children can't always have their mothers. There's many, you know, brokennesses, and there's many things that just, you know, you can't have perfection. But just because we can't have the perfect number one best thing doesn't mean we can't acknowledge what is the best thing and try to do our best to get as close to it as realistically possible. So again, that kind of ties back to our not rejecting reality, but affirming it and seeking to, again, conform ourselves to it as much as we can, given the limits that we do have in our lives.
What social responsibilities do employers have to the mothers that they employ?
You know, that is a big question. And I do think sometimes, you know, it's a very private question that women and employers should openly negotiate and talk about and keep the channel open, you know. So I've had great experiences with my employers, but I know that a lot of employers really don't see their employees as people that they want to stick to for the long term. So, you know, if you are in a situation like that, I encourage people to try to find a better one, you know, where you're really valued or as treated like a human in your workplace, if at all possible. But I do think that employers owe to their employees, again, to not treat them like robots. Whether it's a mother or a father, you know, employers should want employees for the long haul, not people they churn through, not people that they use up and just kind of have the slash and burn approach to personnel management, but really as, you know, trying to invest in people, be with them for the long term. So I've been able to observe workplaces like that, and, you know, and they just have, if you grow your people and take care of your people, they are loyal to you. You don't have to go through the turnover. You have, you know, just a much better, smoother workplace. But of course, that requires an upfront investment and a commitment to your people that just a lot of employers don't have.
You talk a little bit in your article about the competition between the single or the childless woman in the workplace and the mother in the workplace. Tell us about that.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, you know, as I mentioned, you know, if probably longtime listeners are, you know, pretty aware, I have flexible work, which I'm very grateful for. It helps me be able to manage, you know, more family and work. I really couldn't work without that. But the point is, you know, even if you have flexible work, or even if you're working a job that, you know, isn't a super demanding 50, 60, 70-hour week job, say you're working 35, 40 hours a week, you know, that's still work. That's still 35 to 40 hours a week that you're spending on a job and not on your family, right? You know, that's just, again, one of those physical realities. That's you know, the whole point of working is to trade time for money. And so if that time is occupied by an employer, it can't be occupied by your kids. So therefore, you know, single women, single men have at least a time advantage, temporary time. I would say temporary time advantage over people who are working who have kids, just for that simple basic fact. They have, you know, more time in the evenings, weekends, and so forth, where they can spend more on their career than a mother can, or a father even. And so that gives them a competitive advantage, but we don't look at a lot of times what a person who is wholly focused on work, I call it putting all the life investment eggs into the career basket. If you do that, it's a really risky kind of strategy for a happy life. And that's because if you do that and you don't succeed in your highest career aspirations, you know, you basically, you know, you made an investment that went bad, and that was the only one that you put your life into. If, on the other hand, you kind of diversify your portfolio, to extend my analogy, if you have family, you have a church, you have friendships, you have work and you invest as much as you can into the variety of different spheres that can bring meaning, happiness that you commit to, you know, then even if one of them kind of poops out or isn't good for a while, it could be any one of those, the other ones are there to sustain you, to get you through, to help you continue to have happiness even through a rough time in one of the other domains. And so that's part of the reason, you know, we are seeing massive increases in loneliness concurrent with the increases in singleness and the detachment from family and from church and community. You know, the alienation that people are having, again, it's because people aren't widgets. We're not robots. We have souls. We have emotions. We have a need for human connection. And that just cannot be fulfilled in a workplace. So I think there's this over obsessive emphasis on work, and I sometimes wonder if it's, you know, kind of PR to make it more possible for people to be, you know, I guess bought and sold or laid for more cheaply, right? So on behalf of big corporations, if people think that they're getting a lot out of their job more than they really are, or they transfer their need for honor, prestige, you know, or just recognition of their effort, if that moves from family, social life, and other domains, all of it goes into work, then work has a lot more control over you, right? So it also gives you, workplaces a lot more control over people. So they want to impose, say, political or religious views on you, right? If you're scared because so much of your worth is tied into work, you're going to be less likely to say something when a work is really abusing its power over you, telling you what you need to think and how you need to vote.
What are the broader societal dangers for workaholism?
Well, I was just getting into those in my last answer there, you know, but it really is a fragile society, right? So, you know, people, again, almost all people are not going to be the equivalent of, you know, a Hollywood movie star, an elite athlete, that equivalent in whatever kind of domain that they choose to work. If you're in the military, you're almost assuredly not going to be a top general, right? Even if you're a great person, very unlikely still. If you're a professor, almost no chance you're going to work at Harvard. And this is true of all of us, even the really smart people with great grades who have good work ethic and all of it. Just the odds are so low of getting to those high places. But if people are all pushing and see that as the only measure of their value, it really, you know, again, makes people addicted to their work, and it really takes them and separates them from the place that almost everybody can get meaning. And obviously that's church, family, as well as, you know, civic friendships and being a good neighbor and all those sorts of kind of community relations. So what it really is doing is just making people so much, getting people to chase a false dream and exchanging that for a mess of pottage, right? What you end up getting, you're not going to end up achieving that dream. And in the same, you know, time, you had to sacrifice almost everything that made life worth living, you know, to not get it. So it's really setting people up to fail and for loneliness and sadness. And we already see, you know, that starting in society, and given the trends, it's likely to continue.
So finally, Joy, what is the more realistic way for our society to view the raising of children as opposed to all the other things that we pursue in life?
It clearly would be more realistic and healthy if basically raising children and having a family was considered a norm to be celebrated, an important life passage, you know, an experience that was honored, you know, and supported and reinforced, that was encouraged because of the many benefits that it provides people, which are, you know, overwhelmingly evident in all the, you know, scientific literature on the topic. So, you know, again, I'm not against careers. I think, you know, I have one. I enjoy it. It's great. I know many people with fulfilling careers. Yeah, obviously, that is a source to satisfaction and fulfillment. But realistically speaking, again, if you're going to play the odds, you are much more likely to get more good things out of a family than you are out of a career. So your return on your investment is more assured, you know, if you invest in it. And it's also something that's accessible to more people. You know, we have to realize here that this whole debate is basically an elite white-collar college-educated person's debate. The vast majority of jobs aren't fun, creative YouTuber person, you know, despite appearances on, you know, on the media. The vast majority of jobs are, well, jobs. They're hard, they're dirty, they require grit and work ethic, they make your body hurt at the end of the day, they're not that glamorous. And so what do you want to have something to come home to at the end of a day like that? And what, you know, what's that going to be? Netflix and a drink sounds pretty depressing, especially if you multiply that out of, you know, over 40, 50 years of a working life, children, a meal, and a wife, way more happy, way more lively. Now, of course, that's also messy. The kids are loud sometimes. But again, I'd rather take, you know, the kids over the, you know, 20 years, 30 years of Netflix any day. That's what people, when they get it, they always say, you know, they say that majority on surveys as well.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and of a recent column titled Yes, a Family Competes with Women's Careers, but Family Matters More. Read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Joy, thanks.
Thank you.
Thursday on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Dr. Robert George of Princeton University about why that landmark decision of the U.S. Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade, must go. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.